Today on Focus, we'll be talking with a reporter who came across online forums for people giving up children they had adopted to new sets of parents with no oversight from the government or an adoption agency. One name for it is private rehoming. It usually involves international adoptees, and the consequences can be dire. Megan Tuohy investigated the practice for Reuters, and she found one particularly sad case in East Central Illinois. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll talk with Tuohy and with an official from an area adoption agency. That's our topic today on Focus. Our program continues after the news. And welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. On today's show, we're looking at the practice of so-called private rehoming, the transfer of an adopted child from one set of parents to another without the oversight of the government or an adoption agency. The paperwork is minimal. It's a practice that adoptive parents may turn to when they don't know how to handle their child's behavior problems or other special needs. It is not exactly legal, but it does go on. Investigative reporter Megan Tuohy looked at the practice in a series of reports for Reuters entitled The Child Exchange. That series came out last week. There's a link to it on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. And Megan Tuohy is my guest today on Focus. Megan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us today is an adoption official from a local agency. Maria Goki is director of adoption for Illini Christian Ministries in St. Joseph, soon to be moving to Champaign. Maria was telling me she joins us in the studio. And Maria, welcome to Focus.
Thank you. Good to be here.
She's actually been on the program before at the beginning of this year, talking in a program about international adoptions. And we've linked that program as well as our website to the webpage for today's show. Again, will.illinois.edu/focus. Megan, one of the most disturbing things about the series of articles that you wrote is that a couple that lived in East Central Illinois for a time took in several rehomed children and apparently exposed them to both sexual and physical abuse, plus negligence leading to the death of one child. And we're talking here about Nicole and Calvin Eason, formerly of Westville in Vermilion County. Can you tell me about this couple and how you came across them?
Yeah, I'm happy to, and I would also direct people to, the Reuters series included four stories that focused on, that basically told the narrative of this particular couple who did take in many children through rehoming. I would take issue with the way that you characterized what would happen with those children. And I think if you go to the stories, the facts are laid out very clearly. This was a couple who had, she herself, they'd moved around the country, and she had had her own biological children removed from social services, who had determined that she and her husband, there were allegations of abuse and neglect, and one social service official had described them as suffering from severe psychiatric problems as well as violent tendencies. So her own biological children were permanently removed from her custody. In the next couple years, she and her husband were accused of sexually abusing children they babysat. A couple years after that, she basically discovered this world of rehoming. Participants themselves call it an underground network where families go to seek new homes for adopted children that they no longer want. This is activity that takes place in Yahoo groups and Facebook forums. And so through these online networks, Nicole was able to connect with families who were looking to find new homes for their children and obtain at least six children through these rehoming networks.
Are these children with them now?
I traced the six cases in which actually the first child that Nicole, that I'm aware of, that Nicole took through rehoming, she actually took, she was living in Illinois, and at the time was apparently living not with her husband, but with another man, Randy Winslow. And she was able to, within a matter of hours, obtain a child who, from Wisconsin, who had been advertised by his adoptive mother on one of these rehoming groups. Within, you know, it's interesting to note that within, you know, she had the child for several months, and ultimately, a caseworker in Wisconsin found out that this child had been sent to live with the. With this Illinois couple in this manner, and basically insisted to the original adoptive mom that she take him back. And within a matter of months after that, after the child was removed and sent back to Wisconsin, Randy Winslow was discovered in a pedophile chat room by a federal agent and is now serving 20 years in prison for sending and receiving child pornography. So that's the first child that we became aware of here at Reuters that, Nicole Easton had obtained through rehoming. And there were five more children that we became aware of that she took in the next over the course of the next couple years. You know, in every single case, the child was ultimately removed from the home, was, you know, left the home. And so exactly where things stand with her right now is unclear. You know, when I went to visit her in Arizona just several weeks ago, you know, I located her and her husband, Calvin, living in a hotel several miles from the home that they had been renting, that they were in the process of being evicted from. And I asked her if she had any children, and she said, yes, I actually have children in my room right now. Now, who exactly those children are and where they came from, you know, I don't know. I can't answer that. But she did say that she has children right now.
This was a couple that, you know, despite all the things that they've apparently done, they do deny doing anything improper. But despite all of this, was certainly willing to talk to you and be photographed for these reports.
That's correct.
And I guess I'm just wondering, are they typical of people who are using the forums like this? It's really hard to know, I gather, is just, are there any happy adoptions without serious problems that go on through this way? Are there people even worse out there who are not going to talk to you?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. If you look at, it's important to note that this world, you know, that this rehoming activity, where people go into these online forums and seek new families for adopted children, they're, you know, the adopted children they no longer want, and where people go to raise their hands and say, "Hey, I'll take your kids." This is activity that is not recognized by any laws here in the United States, let alone regulated. And so the government has absolutely no idea how many children are involved in this, who are being rehomed in this manner, who's on the sending end, who's on the receiving end. No government agency here in the United States is trying to track this. You know, here at Reuters, we did a deep dive on a single Yahoo group where this activity was taking place, and we found that on average, we scraped all 5,000 messages in this group going back 5 years, and we were able to quantify the activity on this one single group, and we found that on average, a child was being offered up for rehoming on average, one child once a week on average, and that was just in the single group. Now, you're right, it's important to note that this activity is taking place largely out of the view of child welfare authorities. Many times these transfers are made without any third parties, no adoption professionals, no government authorities of any kind. The only vetting that's taking place is done by the adoptive parents who are eager to get rid of the child. And so it really does raise questions about who is on the receiving end, these people who aren't undergoing, in a large number of cases, any scrutiny by government officials. I do think it's important also to note that there are good people who are stepping in. I mean, these are among society's most vulnerable, these children, many times children who have been adopted from foreign countries, who were orphaned in their foreign countries and brought to the United States. They have, I think oftentimes histories of, they've got special needs and histories of abuse or neglect. I think that there is a segment of the folks who step in and, offer to take these kids who have nothing but good intentions and loving homes. The question is, what's certain, though, is that there are also people who are able to gain access to children through this rehoming network who would never be able to obtain children through the government-sanctioned adoption and foster care systems.
Well, this is a tough subject to talk about, perhaps especially if you're someone who's adopted a child or were adopted yourself. But if you have questions and comments on the whole rehoming issue, please call us here at Focus. The toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. I want to bring Maria Gokey in here in just a moment. I do want to get to the other side of these transactions, and those are the parents who are giving up their children in this way, as you describe it in your reports. These are parents whose adopted children have a lot of problems. Megan, could you talk about that, about what sort of situation the parents who give up their children are in?
Sure. I mean, I think that once again, you're going to find that this is going to be happening on a case-by-case basis. And so I don't think that there is one single reason that adoptive parents go online and seek a new family for their adopted child. It's important to note, I think, that, we found cases of parents who had had a child home, had adopted a child, brought the child home from a foreign country, and 5 days later had turned to this rehoming group to say, we're overwhelmed, we can't handle this child. It's been 5 days. Is anybody interested in taking her? Now, there were, many of other cases that if you looked at the advertisements for the children in these online forums, or I spent a lot of time talking to adoptive parents, and there were some themes that came through. A lot of these families said that they were desperate. They felt like they hadn't received enough training going into the adoptions. The child that they adopted came with emotional or behavioral problems that they couldn't have, that they weren't made aware of. And when the adoption went south, they felt like they weren't getting any post-adoption help from the adoption industry, nor were they getting any help from the state government child welfare system. And so many times these adoptive parents said that they just felt desperate and like they had nowhere else to turn. That was a very common theme that came through, both in the online activity and also in the extensive interviews that I did with adoptive parents who had rehomed a child.
Well, Maria, that's where I'd like to bring you in. You're with Illini Christian Ministries, which does work with international adoptions. You don't do the placement itself, but you do work with the families both before and after the adoption.
Correct. Our agency does the home study assessment prior to the adoptive placement, where we approve or deny the family to adopt. And we also do the post-placement, the post-adoption support for the family and ensuring that it's been a healthy and a good placement.
Tell me about the post-adoption support. What sort of things you do and what sort of problems or difficulties do you find adoptive parents having?
The post-adoption requirements are set by the country the child's been adopted from. Each country has their own set of standards and how often we need to go to the home and make sure that the placement is going well. On top of that, we do a one-month post-placement where 1 month after the child's been home, we go into the home and we see how they're doing. That's required by the state of Illinois. And so we go into the home, we see how they're doing, we sit down with them, we observe the child, we observe the family and their element, and we talk about the issues that are going on. What kind of struggles are you having? What are the high points? What are the low points? And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of agencies go in with a checklist and just go through the checklist and see how it's going. Our agency strives to build relationship with the family and really talk with the family about the difficult things and help them through and offer them resources and help them during that transition and for the years afterwards.
How long do you maintain a relationship with some of the families if there are difficulties?
It depends. It's case by case. But it depends. There are families who have adopted 6 or 7 years ago that we still have ongoing contact with and help with. A family can come to us 10, 15 years after their adoptive placement if they're having an issue, and they can always talk to us. But as Megan was saying, not all agencies offer that kind of support, unfortunately.
Now, you've read Megan, Tuohy's reports for Reuters, and about and so you know something of the sort of problems that the adopted children had in these, which were that the adopted parents had trouble dealing with, behavioral problems, all sorts of things, which could go back to whatever situation they were in back in their home country that may have caused them to be given up for adoption in the first place. Is that the sort of thing? Do you see that sort of problems? Is that more common, are more frequent in international adoptions than in others?
Parenting is hard, whether it's biological children or adopted children. No one would ever say that has been through it that parenting is easy. But the thing with international adoption is that you are bringing a child into your home, into your family, to parent who may have been abused or neglected in their past. We have children who have literally watched their parents die before their eyes that are being adopted. And so these children have faced atrocities that no child should ever have to go through. And so you're now having to parent that child and help that child heal from atrocities that they don't even know how to process through and how to express.
Megan, the adopted parents that you spoke to who gave up their children, and the ones you talked to seem to really have deep regrets about all the paths things had taken. What sort of options did they have before them?
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, once again, there were sort of common themes and frustrations that came out when I spoke to these adoptive parents who had rehomed a child. And one of them was that they felt like that, you know, as I said, they had nowhere else to turn. If they went to the most adoption agencies in the United States are not required to assist, families who want to rehome their child, and the vast majority of them don't. There are only a couple agencies here and there that have stepped in to try to assist with this in a sort of formal way. If these adoptive parents turn to the child welfare systems, the government child welfare systems, and seek to relinquish their child to the state, they're often told that they'll be investigated for abuse or neglect, possibly face charges. That they will put the other children in their home in jeopardy, and I think when that avenue shuts down, when they feel like that's not an option, that they really feel like they have nowhere else to turn. I mean, there are obviously private, boarding schools and residential treatment centers, that can cost thousands and thousands of dollars a month. So I think that this largely underground rehoming network sometimes feels like the only option.
And Maria, have you had instances where adoptive parents ultimately surrendered their children to somebody else that they just could not handle it?
I've absolutely seen it happen at the agency that I worked for when I lived in Kentucky. They had a program that assisted families in crisis who have struggled after their adoptive placement. It was a wonderful program set up to help these families who feel like they're at their wit's end and don't know where to turn to. I would like to say one thing, just kind of in response to Megan and the agency's responsibility here. There is something called Hague accreditation, and it's an accreditation that adoption agencies are able to receive. And if an agency is Hague accredited, then they are mandated to have procedures in place for when families are going through crisis. Unfortunately, not all agencies are Hague accredited. The U.S. is trying to go that way where more agencies have to be Hague accredited. And unfortunately, a lot of adoptive families don't know to ask an agency if they're Hague accredited.
Then by Hague accredited, are we talking about the International Court of The Hague?
We are.
And
mm-hmm.
essentially international standards here.
Mm-hmm.
One thing this reminds me of is, Megan, what you write in as far as what, it's not a law against this practice, but there is a compact among states that states agree to that affects this private rehoming practice. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, once again, there are, here in the United States, there is no law that recognizes that rehoming is taking place, let alone tries to regulate it in any way. Now, so in many cases, going online and seeking a new family for your child, your adopted child, and then transferring custody of that child to the stranger met on the internet is perfectly legal. Now, there are certain laws that do exist that can restrict this activity depending on where you live, for example. There are certain states that basically prohibit anybody except for licensed child welfare agencies from advertising children for adoption. So in some cases, depending on where you live, going online and posting an ad for your adopted child, seeking a new home for that child, is illegal, depending on what state you live in. There also is, there is this interstate compact on the placement of children. This legal tool, which basically says that if you transfer custody of a child across state lines, you have to inform child welfare officials in both states so that they can sign off on it and make sure that the child is landing in a safe home. And what I found in the course of this investigation is that in many cases, the rehoming of a child is taking place across state lines, and nobody's informing the state officials as required by the compact. But this compact is rarely enforced. A lot of law enforcement officials with whom I spoke had never even heard of it. And for in Illinois, for example, they haven't prosecuted anybody for violating the compact in at least 15 years. So even the people who administer this compact will tell you that it's rarely enforced and is clearly not serving as a deterrent when it comes to this rehoming activity.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment with more about adoption and so-called private rehoming. This is Focus on WILL. We're back on Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking with investigative reporter Megan Toohey, whose series for Reuters, The Child Exchange, looks at the unregulated practice of giving up children that you've already adopted to other people that you've contacted through the Internet without the checks and investigations of the government or an adoption agency. Also with us is Maria Gokey. She's the director of adoptions at Illini Christian Ministries in St. Joseph. If you've adopted, did you have difficulties when you first brought your child into your home, and how did you cope? Were you ever overwhelmed? We'd love to hear from you about how you worked through your problems here on Focus. Give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Megan, I was wondering, when you came across these internet forums dealing with these rehomings, were you have any idea about how long this had been going on?
Well, we found certain groups that dated back, 9 years, and there were other cases of rehoming that we uncovered in which there were references to online sites that had assisted with that rehoming that went back, I think, at least 10 years. And I would point out that and right before our series was published last week, we took our findings to Yahoo and to Facebook and, told them what we had found and which groups we had identified. Yahoo responded swiftly. Within a matter of hours, they removed every single rehoming group that we had brought to its attention, saying that the activity violated their terms of service. Facebook, took a different response. They said that the groups were a reflection of society and have allowed them to remain active.
Hmm. Are there any other online companies which are hosting forums that you found to be or may be hosting forums of this type?
Yeah, that's a great question. We were able to identify nearly 10 Yahoo groups, Facebook groups, another website that is hosted by an organization based in Idaho that were in which children were being advertised for rehoming in this manner. And that was what we identified here at Reuters in the course of our 18-month investigation. Are there other online forums that are out there in which this activity is taking place? I'm sure it's likely. And the United States government, no level of government here in the United States is looking for those groups or policing them in any way. Once again, there are no laws here in the United States that address this. No government officials that are trying to monitor this activity and what happens to these children in any way.
Since the report came out and it's being it's published and it's being discussed on the internet, among other places, have you seen any further reaction by law enforcement, by the internet companies that might be hosting these forums, by anybody?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no doubt that when the story came out, our series was published last week, there were 5 installments that came out over the course of 3 days. NBC News partnered with us here at Reuters in the home stretch of the project and did several segments on rehoming. And there's no doubt that the series generated quite a response from people within the adoption community, members of Congress, foreign officials, who said that they were very concerned about this activity, very concerned about the welfare of these children who are being passed from home to home. And I think that in the next weeks, it's going to be interesting to see, exactly what the, how the response plays out. If there's going to be any, if there are going to be any reforms that take place. Here at Reuters, we're very committed to this story and are going to be following, any and everything that happens every step of the way.
Maria Gocha, you were telling me off there that there are ways that sometimes adoptive custody is ended when things are really not working out. Ended in a legal way with oversight. They're usually not called rehoming, I take it. Tell me about the process and how it works.
Mm-hmm. When it's done the legal, ethical way, it's called adoption disruption or adoption dissolution, either one of those terms. And when it's done in the correct way, we're not just talking about a power of attorney being signed. We're talking about an actual legal proceedings of adoption proceedings where the adoptive family, the new adoptive family, has to go through the home study process and the post-adoption support process, go through ICPC if it's interstate.
And the ICP, that's the Interstate Compact
on the Placement of Children
that Macon was talking about, that is not well enforced.
Correct.
Or
mm-hmm.
even understood by some law mm-hmm. enforcement officials.
Correct. And when done the legal way, the ethical way, adoption disruptions and adoption dissolutions can be a positive thing and a healing thing for the child and the families involved. Now, the story that Megan wrote was not about adoption dissolutions or disruptions. It was about this private rehoming and people who have kind of gone around the legal process of going through legal adoption.
And you've talked about the concern that not all adoption agencies, certainly dealing with international adoptions, are as rigorous in checking up on the families and making sure that the adoption is a good one to start with, or are checking up afterwards to make sure that everything is going well. Do you feel that the work that you do, that you're among a minority, or are there a fair amount of conscientious agencies, or rather, there are a fair amount of international adoptions which are able to get that sort of oversight?
It's a hard question to answer. I feel if an agency is Hague accredited, that's what I look for when I work with agencies, is if they are Hague accredited. If an agency is Hague accredited, then they have to abide by a higher standard when it comes to training the family, when it comes to post-adoption support, when it comes to crisis support. So if I see that an agency is Hague accredited, I know they abide by these stricter standards. If an agency is not Hague accredited, it can be cause for concern. I always tell families to look for that Hague accreditation when working with an agency.
How are couples that are looking to adopt to know this? I mean, are you the sort of agencies, is yours the sort of agency that they would go to first?
They would either, it depends. Some families find a placement agency first. Some families find their home study agency first. If you go to an agency's website, if they're Hague accredited, they usually have a COA stamp at the bottom of their website, the Council on Accreditation. If you see that COA stamp on their website, you know that they're Hague accredited.
I know in looking at situations like this, they're tragic in whatever number they occur, but it's hard to tell whether they're a large amount of the problematic adoption cases out there are a small number. Is there? It's not quite what you were looking at in your investigation, Megan. But do you have any way of knowing how big a part of adoptions these problem cases and these rehoming cases are?
Sure. Yeah, well, once again, I mean, a very, very, very good question, and one that that nobody here in the United States government can answer, because no government agency is tracking this activity or trying to regulate rehoming in any way. You know, no one here can tell you in the United States how often this is happening and who exactly is involved and what the outcomes are. And so I just, you know, I would just point out that here at Reuters, once again, we spent 18 months doing a very thorough investigation of this activity. We did a deep dive on, the single Yahoo group, and it was clear that there were people from across the country who were turning to this one specific Yahoo group for rehoming. You know, there were others, plenty of other ones, similar ones out there. We just chose to do a deep dive on this one, where a child was on average being offered up for rehoming once a week. And, we found that 70% of those children were said to have been adopted from a foreign country. Many of them had special needs. There were about one in five of the children who were offered up or said to have, suffered sexual abuse. And we're talking about a very, very vulnerable, vulnerable population. And experts, when we presented our findings to, child welfare experts, and there were many people who said, that this was the manner in which these children were being offered up, the sort of detailed descriptions of, their appearance and their background. Especially in cases of sort of sexual abuse, was such that it was just, ripe for exploitation.
Well, this raises me to think, and Maria Gokey, I was just asking you before, what your agency does as compared to what other agencies do. Perhaps a better question to ask right now is, if you're an adoptive parent who is encountering problems and you don't feel you have any support, where can you turn?
The first answer would be to your placement agency and your home study agency. both of those agencies. But if you feel that neither of those agencies are providing you with the support you need or the resources that you need, then definitely the next resource would be going to another agency and talking to another agency. Is there a fee that might come along with that? Yes, maybe, but maybe not. Maybe the agency knows of resources that they can give you to help you with whatever the steps are you need to take in your crisis situation.
Your agency, Illini Christian Ministries, works with people throughout the state. Is yours an agency that you feel people in this situation can call to find some idea where they can go to get assistance?
Absolutely. We're a Christian agency. We're a ministry first and foremost. If a family would call who was not one of our clients but was in a crisis situation and needed assistance, first and foremost, my goal would be to help that family, because our agency's goal and mission, and hopefully every adoption agency's goal and mission, is to provide for the safety of that child, no matter what the circumstances.
And if they're not working with you, are you able to refer them to other agencies that you would trust to be able to provide real help?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is as you were saying, Megan. This is something where you just don't see much. You don't see much law out there, much regulation. Is this a matter of international adoptions being different from adoptions within the country?
Well, I think that's a really good question. And let's start at the very beginning of the process, looking at the training of adoptive parents. If you adopt a child from the state foster care system here in the United States, you know, in most cases, in many states, you're going to have to undergo dozens of hours of training. Now, Maria's been talking about, in international adoptions, about half of international adoptions go through these Hague-accredited agencies, and the other half, aren't taking place with an agency of that kind, with a federally accredited agency being involved. And even if you look at what happens with these Hague accredited agencies and what goes on with the training of those parents, I mean, the federal law on that is 10 hours of training. So right there, you can see from the very beginning of the process a difference in what takes place with international adoptions and what takes place with certainly adoptions from foster care systems here in the United States. A pretty significant discrepancy in what's required in terms of training of those parents, 10 hours versus dozens of hours of training. And that's only, once again, there's this large number of international adoptions that are taking place by Americans where there's no training requirement whatsoever.
That vacuum that we're going into, I'm wondering, just with the online groups, the online forums we've been talking about, were some of them started by people with the best of intentions?
Oh, I think that there's no doubt that there are people who are stepping into this world of rehoming because they really want to help children, and they recognize that there is a vacuum of services and support and professionals who are who are getting involved and taking responsibility and ownership of this activity. And so I do think that there are people who have started these online forums and are involved because they really care. They have really, they have the best of intentions. And, I spent time, one of the stories in our series looked at some of these so-called middlemen who have stepped in, and they have very good intentions, but in many, many cases, they're not licensed professionals. They don't have social work licenses or any other, official training that has, that you'll see in these, government-sanctioned foster care or adoption systems. And so even those folks themselves will tell you that they're not running criminal background checks on people. They're not doing the type of vetting that could prevent bad people from gaining access to children in this largely underground network.
Okay. A tweet that's come our way from Alva, who writes that, "I'm appalled to learn that rehoming is so common." And that's hard to put a measurement on. Is it so common, Megan, or is this just a very disturbing smaller a problem that occurs in a smaller amount? I don't know what to measure with here.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that, and I would say that what's certain is that that nobody here in the United States government can answer that question, because there is no tracking going on of this activity or this group of children. There aren't any official records or monitoring taking place. So nobody here in the government and nor the adoption industry can tell you what's happening in terms of this rehoming activity. And, I think that here, the Reuters Project, we did our best to kind of quantify it in large part by zooming in on this one particular Yahoo group where a child was being offered up once a week. And people from across the country were turning to the group to solicit new homes for their children.
And I want to remind folks that you can read the Reuters series that Megan Toohey reported on. There's a link to it at our website. Go to will.illinois.edu/focus and look for the posting for today's show, where you'll find a link to the Reuters articles and also a link to Ileana Christian Ministries, which is Maria Gokey's group. We're talking with Megan Toohey and Maria Gokey here on Focus. Still time for your questions about the topic of rehoming adoptive children with new parents without review or vetting by agencies, our government officials. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Maria Gokey, you've said you don't know how common this is. It's certainly not a good thing, but it's not something that absolutely surprised you either to find out what was in Megan Toohey's reports.
It's not. Working in the adoption community, you definitely see families who struggle post-adoption. I'm an adoptive mom myself, and it's not easy. My son was 9 months old when he came home, but there were definitely still issues that we had to sort through. But no, I wasn't surprised when I read the Reuters report, just because I'm familiar with the difficulties that adoptive families go through.
Maria, I don't know how much to what degree you're ready to talk about it. Were you working in the adoption field at the time that you adopted yourself?
Yes, I just adopted this year, so it's
okay.
Just been recent. Mm-hmm.
And is it your own agency that you turned to when you needed help?
No, that would be a conflict of interest. So we worked with another agency. And it's interesting because working in the field, I have plenty of head knowledge and I know a lot about adoption and attachment and the kind of issues that children go through post-adoption. But it's different when you're right there in the thick of it and you're not getting any sleep at night and you're exhausted and struggling with attachment and bonding.
So that really makes it, when you're up against it like that, I can see how you might not be surprised looking at some of the desperation that some of the adoptive parents that Megan Toohey met seem to be going through.
Right. In the Reuters report where she said that a specific parent posted that they had only been home for 5 days and were struggling. During my son's first week home, I looked at my husband and I said, I think I only want one child. I don't think I can do this again. And things have gotten so much better. And we have an amazing son and he's wonderful. And we love being his parents. But it's an adjustment, just not for the child, but for the adoptive parents, for everyone involved.
But turning to some agency that could provide help, was that an important factor?
Absolutely. And just being dedicated to our son and what was best for him, and sticking through it, through the thick and thin.
I can imagine when people are up against it, it's not like I don't know where you would go on the internet that says, adoption crisis emergency or whatever. Mm-hmm. You might fit it in Google. where you and make sure that you will come up with a responsible agency as mm-hmm. compared to some of the forums that Megan Toohey reported on. Mm-hmm. They could both show up there.
It's lonely during that post-adoption phase when you're going through the difficulties. You feel like a bad parent or like you're the only one that has faced this. One of the great resources that my husband and I had was just a private Facebook group of adoptive parents that we knew that had adopted from the same orphanage. And it wasn't anything like the rehoming groups, but it was just a place, a safe place where parents could get together and talk and exchange ideas about some of the difficult things.
Okay. I'm wondering, because, you know, as I was going through this conversation, I was thinking of the myths, the happy myths that can come up with adoption. I was thinking of old fairy tales where an old couple finds a little baby in a basket at their doorstep. And, of course, she grows up, and whatever happens, there's a happy ending.
Right.
With that in our culture, it can be quite possible that people who adopt don't always know what the process is really like.
Right. And I've seen both extremes. I've seen where there's this fairy tale that little kids think it will be or that adoptive parents think it will be. But then a lot of times when it comes to the news, you hear the negative things about adoption. The negative stories are the ones that make the news. And it's kind of just like marriage. You know, you enter marriage hoping it will be a fairy tale. And a lot of times it's work. It's any relationship is work. And that's how adoption is going into it. It's going to be work. You're going to have to work on attachment and bonding. You're going to have to take this child to counseling and therapy probably. It's not a fairy tale. It's being a real world parent.
Megan, I'd be interested in hearing your view on this, especially as you went and spoke to some of the adoptive parents, but also some of the adopted children as they reached adulthood. And as you told their stories, some of them, actually quite a few of them, still seem to be having problems. At the same time, they are trying to get on with their lives.
Yeah, that's correct. I interviewed young folks who had been rehomed, children, you know, people who had been originally adopted from China and Russia, Liberia, who were brought to the United States by American families who decided that they no longer wanted that child and solicited new homes for the child online, and in some cases they transferred custody of the child, then took them back, and in other cases the child was removed from the second home and taken into the state foster care system. And in many of these cases, the children are now 18, 19, early 20s, and living totally on their own. They are, by many standards, still orphans. They never got the family that they had hoped for, that they had dreamed of, and they're really struggling to navigate their young adulthood on their own.
So these are... No, there are no purely happy endings here, it sounds like, in the cases that you were looking at, which were pretty dire to begin with.
Yeah, once again, I think that it is important to note that there are certainly cases where a child is rehomed into a loving, stable, happy home and remains part of that family happily. I think that there are other cases, and many of the cases that I looked at, where the child there certainly was not a happy ending, and the children felt like they were kind of passed around, like pets. I mean, the term rehoming was originally used by people trying to find new homes, new owners for their pets, and you talk to the young folks to whom this has happened, and many of them say that that's exactly how they felt, like animals being passed from one owner to the next.
Megan, I'm wondering, besides all the reporting you've done here, did you and your team at Reuters, would you feel ready to do any recommendations on what should be done legally or wherever as far as this problem is concerned?
Right. Well, you know, my job as a reporter, as you know, is to gather all the facts to the best of my ability. And I think that's what we as a team did here at Reuters, and to present those facts. And I think that there is now we're starting to see a response from lawmakers, from foreign officials, from the adoption community itself, people who say that they're, you know, who are very concerned that nothing is being done to account for these children who remain largely anonymous in our country's child welfare system, and that there are that steps need to be taken to address our findings. And as I said, we're going to be tracking that and from start to finish. So exactly what can be done, you know, I think that those are conversations that are just now starting to happen. So it'll be interesting to see how they unfold.
Well, Megan Toohey's reports on the Child Exchange are linked to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. There you will also find a link to Maria Gokey's organization, Illini Christian Ministries. We're out of time now, but I want to say thank you. Thank you very much to Megan Toohey with Reuters and Maria Gokey with Illini Christian Ministries.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Tomorrow on Focus, 50 years ago this month, George Harrison of the Beatles visited his sister in the southern Illinois mining town of Benton a good 5 months before Beatlemania hit the U.S. He was just a nice skinny guy with a lot of hair who played the guitar. It was the only time George Harrison could visit the U.S. as a normal person. We'll learn more about that visit 50 years ago on tomorrow's program. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WYLL.